A big round of applause to our
the players.
Female game developers up on stage, and it's okay that it says PS4. We're inclusive of everybody here at Microsoft and at Xbox. So my name is Crystal Sanchez. I will be moderating this panel, and I'm going to let my distinguished guests introduce themselves. I'm super excited to have some female developers up here, and we'll start with the lovely woman on my left.
My name is Stephanie Tran. I'm a producer on The Sims 4. I lead expansion packs. I'm excited to share my experience and stories with you.
Hi. Hello, my name is Seema Morjani. I'm also on the Sims 4 team. I started as a software engineer. I've been at EA and The Sims for 10 years. And now I'm a development manager of the UI team.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lacey Bannister. I'm a lead animator for The Sims. I've been in the industry now on The Sims for 13 years, and I'm super excited to be able to share my experiences and the experiences of all the ladies on the stage here with you all today.
Hi, everyone. My name is Katie Scott. I was the lead designer of this journey and the first journey, so working on a lot of narrative design, feature design, narratively driven features, that kind of thing. Been with EA for a little under a decade, and I had an animation diploma and a photography diploma, actually. And super excited to share with you my perspective on being women in the gaming industry, and as well as some of the cool, really cool stuff that we're doing in FIFA.
Hi, guys. I'm Ruby Burke. I'm a development director on FIFA. I worked with Katie on the first two versions of The Journey, and now I work on FIFA Ultimate Team. I'm relatively new to the games industry, been at EA for 2.5 years, came from a marketing and communications background, so my brain is on fire on a daily basis about this like amazing industry, and it's my first GDC, so just a lot of good stuff. Super happy to be here to chat with you guys today.
All right. Well, I thought we'd get into, I was going to actually have them sort of talk about their journey and their start in games. So I think maybe where you haven't already touched that, if you can, but more specifically, I'd love to talk about women in gaming and how many women are sort of represented in your game team. And if you've seen that dynamic as a result of having women on your game team change and sort of affect the way the development lifecycle works. So do you want to tackle that first, Stephanie?
I'm going to tackle the part in terms of how I got into games. I went into college thinking I wanted to be a lawyer. I did poli sci, did that like halfway through. Got a job, and I was like, this is kind of boring. So every summer, I kind of just took the opportunity to do an internship. So I started out doing an internship at Sony Pictures in marketing and creative. So a lot of like one sheets, like the DVDs you see, like we did all the B movies. So I started doing that. I found that I really loved production. So we did a lot of post-production, so like B rolls and kind of the things you see when you guys watch Jimmy Kimmel. So I really enjoyed that. So my next summer, I did internship at DreamWorks and I did production for the art department and I worked on the B movie. And that's kind of how I got into production. I had a friend working at EA was like, oh, you'll probably really love working for games. So I applied, I took a risk, it was a contract job, and I love it, and I've been doing it ever since.
Awesome. Thank you. Seema?
So my background, I have a computer science degree from UC Berkeley, and after that I went to Carnegie Mellon's Entertainment Technology Center. I wanted to work for Pixar. That was my dream. And then when I got to the Entertainment Technology Center, I definitely learned a lot there, and I remember like the first day people asking, how many of you want to work in video games? And like 1/3 of the class raised their hand, and I remember Randy Pausch saying like, well, it'll be 1/3 by the time you graduate, but it'll be a different third of the class, which is quite interesting. I still remember that. I didn't actually go into games right after graduating. I ended up working at a startup company. We did mini games like in interactive advertising. But then I was kind of getting bored, and it was the company wasn't heading in the right direction that I felt. And then one of my colleagues and my good friends, who's in the audience right now, actually, referred me to a position on her team at EA, and that's how I got into games. And I did not think I would be working in games and at EA for this long, but it ended up being a success. I started as a gameplay engineer. I went into tools engineering. I went into UI engineering, and I definitely I liked that change, but at the same time, it helped me grow as a generalist, and then I decided UI engineering was where I wanted to be. I really liked being able to kind of affect the user flow of things. Even as an engineer, the Sims culture really lets you get into the design of things too. So.
Lacey.
Let's see, where did I start out? So I don't actually advise this, but I ended up only applying for one college, got in, apparently, to Ringling School of Art and Design, and majored in computer animation there. And then when I graduated, EA actually offered me a contract in Orlando with Madden Football. So I went to Orlando, and I took a tour of the studio, and I met the team. And something for me just wasn't clicking. It just didn't feel like that was the right kind of a game for me. So I heard that there was an opportunity on The Sims out in California. So I also don't advise this. I declined my first job offer in the industry. And I applied for The Sims. I ended up getting that position. I really wanted to move out to California and try something new. And I took that risk, and it ended up working out for me. I would say that my goal was never actually to get into gaming. I wanted to get into feature film as an animator. I mean, that's like the holy grail when you first start out in the industry. So I figured I would start with EA, and I would be there for a couple of months. So 13 years later, I'm still there on The Sims, and I think that's a testament to the company and the people I work for, or people I work with, and the projects that we create are kind of really unique to the whole industry as a whole. So that's why I've been there so long.
Yeah, right on. Thank you, Lacey.
Unlike the other panelists up here, I actually pursued gaming as my dream job. From the moment that I got my hands on a controller, I wanted to be a game designer. It's all I ever wanted to do. And I grew up, I'm a little bit older, I grew up when there was no internet. And I actually, I didn't know that gaming wasn't for me until I was in my late teens. And I think I've sort of seen over the years women come onto my team, but again, sort of falling into it rather than pursuing it. And I never really understood that, but now I'm starting to see why. And I think initiatives like this and being here at this type of event is really helping change that. I've been the sole woman on many, many game teams. I've been the sole developer on many game teams. I've been with a lot of women who are in project management and that type of thing, but not necessarily a lot of designers. And I was really excited actually to hire my first female designer. I've been with EA, like I said, nearly a decade, and I just hired my first female designer. Thank you. I know. But even she fell into games. She was referred by a friend, which I felt like was pretty much the most common thing that I had heard. And I want to just quickly tell one little story. When I was in my late teens, I worked at Walmart in the electronics department, and my job was to sell video games. So I knew a lot about them, and I could sell any video game. A woman came up to me, and she said, will you please ask one of the guys to help me with the video games? And I said, oh, I can totally help you with that. I'm sure I can find a great video game for you. And she said to me, no, it's for my son. The guys are the only ones who play these, so I'm going to ask you again to find a guy to help me. And I wish she was here today. So I could say,
I can help you.
B-word, I make them now.
So as I already told you guys, I fell into the game situation. But I think what was interesting for me is I fell into the most masculine game team and game in the world. And I'd come in from marketing and advertising, always had probably skewed more female. All my bosses were female. So it was definitely a very interesting experience. Katie was there. It was basically me and Katie on FIFA Story Mode. And it was an interesting experience. But what I think's been amazing is that I came into the industry because a couple of my friends worked at EA for years and thought it would be amazing in terms of scope and scale of work. Like, I'm a project manager, and they're like, oh, this is insane. But what's been really fascinating since I got there is just the breadth of opportunity that's available. So as someone who's fallen into the industry, I think that's a key point, is that there's all these different kind of parts of the business that that are just growing, and the medium itself is so flexible that there's new stuff all the time. So I think that dynamism is really one of the keys right now, just in terms of recruiting.
Yeah. No matter what you're good at, where you are, there's a spot for you.
To that point, I know we have a list of we all prepared questions ahead of time because I have such an awesome panel. But I do want to talk about the falling into versus the purposeful planning, because I also fell into gaming, and Lacey and I had the opportunity to work on The Sims many, many years ago. But the advice to all the women here today and the men who support us and support them, like, how do we start being more purposeful and mindful about bringing women into gaming? And what do you all think as female developers, like, how can we help enable that process and empower that process to not just bring our friends along, but even our daughters, our sisters, our nieces, you know, all of those women out there who never thought gaming was for them. Do you have any advice?
I think for me, I didn't grow up knowing about engineering. I think for my parents, it was like, be a doctor. You're Asian, be a doctor. But engineering, I mean, my parents knew what it was, but it's just something I didn't even think about growing up. And just, like, you know, I've watched a couple documentaries on, like, what we can do. And I feel like it's really just kind of getting into the early generation what they can do and seeing if they want to do it. These ladies have worked with me. We work with Girls Who Code on campus. Young girls come, and then we kind of just talk to them about the games. And it is engineering focused, but we kind of go over all the disciplines so they know what is there. For, like, my nieces, I get them, like, Goldie boxes and stuff like that, so they're learning how to build. Because, like, I got Barbie when I grew up. I didn't get building things, and I just never thought about things that way when I was young. So I feel like starting early and kind of just letting people know what you do, letting people know about what's out there, I think is important.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, one thing that we need to remove from the industry is the idea that you must use the product to make the product. I feel like there's no other industry where they demand that you, you know, buy this product in order to actually be a part of making it. I feel like you know, job requisitions and all that kind of stuff, are you a gamer? That doesn't help anything. It should actually say the exact opposite. It should be like, you don't need to be a gamer, and as I said before, there's something here for you. And I think inviting diverse perspectives into our industry makes it better. So we actually, as leaders on this panel and in the industry, I do feel like somewhat of a duty to make sure that there are people out there who know that we want them. But we want you to come to us, come to EA, come to, you know, all these other, come to Microsoft, because you're welcomed, because otherwise, we're in an echo chamber. I don't think, I've made a lot of games. I've made a lot of really bad games. A lot of really bad games. And why? Because we were in an echo chamber, and no one was saying anything different. No one was saying, like, ooh, that's kind of a weird idea, or I don't think people are going to like that. Because it was so much samesy-samesies, I think, from my perspective. As an industry, we need to move past this, are you a gamer thing.
Yeah. So, go ahead, Lisa. I just want to say that I also think to the question that getting exposure young. When I was in high school, we had just gotten Photoshop for the first time. That totally dated me. You know, we all had flip phones. But exposure at a young age, and then also a lot of encouragement to the people younger in generations within your family or friends. Those two things, I think, are really key to getting younger groups of people involved in the industry from the ground up.
Thank you, Lacey. I'd like to go back to what Katie was saying, because it actually came up in our previous panel on Power Up Lunch, which is this diversity of background and diversity of thought. So I'd love to get each of your perspectives from a game development process. And as we think about the creations that we're making, how do we bring that and how do we inspire that in our team members? Women and men, and what do you guys think about in terms of where it was, like Lacey and Katie and Ruby, like where it was maybe 10, 15 years ago to where it is today? Because I think we're in a really changing world today. I think it's for me, I feel like it's never been better to be a woman and be a Latina woman in gaming than right now. So I'd love to get your guys' thank you. I'd love to get your guys' perspective on that. Do you want to start, Rubies?
So I think what's interesting is within the industry, there's just such a broad range of opportunities, and I think getting to the point where we, can chat with people about all those different opportunities and really getting to the crux of what's available. What's interesting is we have this, it's considered maybe a barrier in some ways, but especially in our industry, we're quite visible as the female members of the team, especially if we're a different ethnicity. So that can, you know, feel sometimes a bit overwhelming. You feel like you have to be on point all the time because people are really, you know, watching what you're doing and saying. But I think if we flip it around, there's an opportunity to really bring people along with us and share that information. The guys always remember your name because you're usually the only woman in the room. You know, there's a lot of really good things happening, and I think that's what's inspiring from that side of things for me.
How about you, Katie?
Well, my perspective is that the industry is changing and technology is changing. And there's a couple sort of things at play. One, we know people play games, even if they don't consider themselves to be a gamer. I'm sure everyone is aware of the statistic that the largest gaming demographic is women over 35. Okay, so that means that we need to make products for people who want to buy products. So that's number one. How are you going to do that? Well, you need to know them. Maybe you need to invite them to your game team to help you design these games. And number two, I think games are changing in terms of what they provide. I don't think we're making games anymore. I think we're making services. So we talk about esports, or we talk about movies that are developed out of games, or all kinds of different services. I mean, The Sims is a perfect example. How are we going to make those if we just have a bunch of the same type of person in there? We need new people. We need people like Ruby. She comes from advertising. She's got
some. You need people like Ruby.
She's got something to contribute to our product, which, as I say, is no longer a game but a service.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
I think I would say that our team is unique in the fact that, at least on the animation team, two of the four leads are women. We are over 50% women animators on my team. And when I'm looking at my animators and I'm assigning work to them, I'm not looking at them. And I mean, this is really important that I think that I'm not looking at them and assigning them work based on
gender.
I'm assigning them work based on their skill sets, what they're interested in, and of course the logistics of the project come into play. But that's how you get the most incredible group of content, I think, is by when I've assigned a female animator a vampire fight scene. It was the most incredible thing ever. You know, and I didn't do it because of any gender bias. But I think that's something that's really important on any kind of a team, is to give people, flatten the playing field as far as challenges and opportunities. So.
So when I first started at EA, I was like on a team of a lot of gameplay engineers, I don't know, like 15 maybe, and I realized I was the only female in the room. Now I'm on a team with, I'm on the UI team, it's about 10 of us, and half of us are women. And that's not really how it's changed over time. I think our gameplay team still has maybe only one female engineer. But I stopped noticing it, and I don't know why that is. Maybe it was, it could have been in my mind, maybe, just like being young and like thinking, oh my gosh, I'm the only woman in the room. Maybe it's the fact now that like I know the product, I know I'm more confident in myself to kind of not notice these things unless they're brought up to me. Or maybe it's a testament to The Sims culture. I don't know. I think we do have a lot of females on the team, like the team as a whole, that make me feel comfortable. Like our production team, Steph can say, is probably more.
I think production, female. We're about 50%, 50. We're pretty equal. We may be winning. I don't remember. I have to count. But I mean, for me, like the dynamic of women and men is just, kind of think differently, we're wired differently, so it's nice to kind of have that balance and kind of be able to bounce things back and forth. I feel like that changes, at least in my position, how we make decisions, how we organize certain parts of the game, how we design. I think it's good to have that balance, and I feel like because we're also in the Bay Area, I feel like our team's very diverse. Mm-hmm. So not only gender, we get a lot of different cultures and things like that, and things that we touch on the game.
Okay, I know, having been on that team, that it was very, I was very shocking, you know, years ago in 2007 or 2006 when I joined that team, it was 50% women, because I came from Redwood Shores where it was mostly men. I worked on The Godfather, which was like the most, the M-rated game, it was violent, and you know, there's a lot of cussing, a lot of killing and all of that stuff. But I would like to talk, because I do feel like Sims was very purposeful. And I feel like the culture, to your point, was very supportive of like this movement towards, we make a game that's also for women. If you looked at the audience, it's probably still very true today. It was like a 50-50% in terms of the gamers who played The Sims. I'd love to hear from the FIFA team in terms of, like, how do we, from a game development perspective, like, how do we start making that mind shift? Because I do feel like part of it was just the creation, like the fact that that game was definitely geared toward a more female audience. So changing the perspective of, hey, like, I play Tetris, I'm a hardcore gamer. I'd call myself a gamer. Like, I think that there's some of that happening in our industry. But I'd love to hear from the FIFA team in terms of how you see it affecting FIFA, which is a primarily male-dominated audience of gamers, and how what your team is doing to kind of change that and shift it.
I think there's a big misconception about the number of gamers that play FIFA who are women. We've been doing a lot of research and trying to understand really what that number is, or roughly what that number is, yeah. And we were really surprised to find that it was significantly higher than we imagined. And I think we need to make sure that we're not dismissive of the way that women make their way into our game. So it's not offensive to say that a lot of women will play with their boyfriends or their husbands, that that's their sort of exposure to FIFA, and that they're interested in that. We also have a lot of women who love football, so therefore they want to be engaged with their sport and they play FIFA. And knowing that, now that we have that information, and we actually tried to seek out that information, we feel there is opportunity. So what do we do with it? We know there's opportunity. We want to invite women to our game, so what are we doing? Mm-hmm. And I can't really share a lot of details, but
all top secret. But I think that's really just half the battle on a game like this that is perceived one way, is yeah. getting that information so that we can have those conversations. One of my favorite days at work last year was when the U.S. and Canadian national teams played up in Vancouver, and the stadium was packed. It was outstanding, and most of the audience was little girls and their mums and dads, and it was amazing water cooler discussion the next morning about, you know, that just made it real. We were all there. Like, that made it real in terms of the opportunity that's ahead of us. You know, all these people that love the sport and likely have a console at home, and how we put that together. So I think having the information, Crystal, is the big thing for us. Yeah. It's been, you know, we're a growing game year over year. And so having that perspective that in order to continue to grow and be relevant, we need to be able to meet the needs of the new user base and the existing one as well.
And it's not just women, it's about different player motivations. So like, yeah. if we make games for people who have certain motivations, well, why don't we make games for people like all different kinds of motivations? If we do that, we will invite new people into the game. Maybe they're women, maybe they're men, you know, maybe they're something, you know, completely different. And that's really the point of this, is that we have opportunities in different spaces.
Yeah.
And I think actually if we make a game for a motivation that we've never, you know, really pursued before, I bet you we get a big influx of women.
Yeah. So I'd love to jump into that, right? So we've talked a lot about women and gaming, which is great, like it's what we're all here for, but can we talk about the storytelling part of the game development process? And I know that you have a few slides to present. I'd also like to hear the Sims perspective when you guys are creating and doing your pre-pro and planning, because I've seen that process live and in person, but can you talk us through your four-question framework and sort of how that ties to the topic at hand?
For sure.
I'll give you the clicker.
Oh, awesome. Is it an easy... Oh, you'll click for me?
Awesome.
It's perfect. Okay. We're such a good team. Okay, so basically, between FIFA 17 and 18, had a speaker come into the studio as part of our Women's Ultimate Team employee resource group we have, and it really spurred some great thought and discussion. And so what we're going to walk you guys through today is kind of a light version of the four questions that we've been using to evaluate our game in terms of the opportunities for diversity and inclusion. We thought this would be a really great opportunity because it's something near and dear to us, but it's something that we actually feel is quite simple and straightforward, and we can all take it back to whatever product we're working on in terms of, you know, some key takeaways. So in terms of the questions, I'm getting old and can't read the screen. But basically, the four questions that we're going to walk you guys through are: how often do we seek stories of underrepresented people? Are we portraying people of diverse backgrounds authentically? Are we imparting any unconscious bias in our narratives? And how diverse and inclusive is our product?
So for the first question, how often do we seek stories of underrepresented people? I think every single product, whether it's a game, any other kind of media, needs to define for themselves what underrepresented means. I think if you look at, for example, a company like Disney, they might think that their opportunities are in culture. Maybe a company like Marvel thinks it's in race, something like that. On FIFA, we happen to think we have opportunities with women, that type of thing. And what it really meant for FIFA was we were looking for to create characters that were different. So we started out with Alex Hunter. He's in the middle there. He's a biracial teen from the UK. And we surrounded him with a really strong supporting cast of women that we actively tried to make very deep and to give them real characteristics. So it would have been easy for us to go with something very Nathan Drake-y, but we went completely the other way.
And then the second question is really about authenticity of how we're portraying people, especially those of diverse backgrounds. And we've all seen it done, you know, in a way that feels like whitewashing or kind of, you know, insensitive in the, you know, Scarlett Johansson situation of last year. And so, you know, that's an extreme, obviously, and there are probably many reasons for it. But, you know, it's just that, it's that reminder of authenticity and seeking it out. So, you know, there's a number of ways that we can do that, just in terms of research and consultancy. We call it at FIFA, apropos name, the Women's Council. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's getting to the motivation of the character in a way that's true to them and not based on, you know, things that we perceive or stereotypes.
It's not okay to have an underrepresented character in your game or in your product, but actually do nothing to make sure that they're authentic. That's totally not okay. And I think if you ask this question of your team, like, what have we done to make sure that our character is authentic? And if everyone just goes blank, that's probably
we probably have our answer. In terms of our team, we're just sharing these little micro examples because I think it's really this straightforward when we're looking at our products. We had Susan Wells, who's a boss of an EPL team. Like, this
She's
is
the
a big,
big
deal in football. We've learned this. When we first met her in our, you know, boardrooms, she was very male skewed in terms of her personality traits and her, her appearance, her art. And we were like, this isn't good. What was interesting, though, is as we were going through it, is we did that research consultancy component. This is where the Women's Council was formed. We had conversations about what a woman in leadership looks like and acts like. We looked around the rooms that we were in and the amazing women on our teams, our senior producer, our senior DDs, who, you know, actually have footballs in their offices.
Their offices and, look just like you know, that, but they don't look like...
They definitely don't look like that.
School headmasters.
But they're authentic to who they are. They lead in a style that's authentic to who they are. They don't lead like a man. They don't exhibit those traits. So once again, micro example in terms of the overall story, but asking the question led us to discover all these little nuggets that we were able to get in and make some changes.
Make them better. The third question is about unconscious bias. So everyone is susceptible to unconscious bias. It's not a bad thing. It's not malicious. It just is. We're all human. We have these biases. So on the left here is the Simpsons writer's room. And on the right is the Sephora engineering team. And I just ask you, what biases do you think that these teams are susceptible to? And how do you think they might be negatively impacting their product? We have the same thing on FIFA. We're very masculine leaning.
We look kind of like the Simpsons.
Yep, we look kind of like the Simpsons writer's room. So how might that negatively impact our product? We're completely aware of it. It does negatively impact our product. one super small example too. One of the biases that we have is that our team is very
very British.
Yes. And the EPL happens to be a very big soccer league. It's not the only one, but it's a very big one. The imagery on the left there is actually images from our first story mode trailer, and you can see it's all Manchester United. And so we were thinking potentially we had some biases in that we were saying that football was, you know, the center of the universe was in the UK and it was nowhere else, which was obviously completely wrong because it's like a global game and it's probably the world's most global game. So for our second story mode, we went all over the world. We went to LA, we went to Spain, we went to Germany, we went to France, we went to Brazil, and we were in the UK.
So the last question is really, you know, a summary of the previous ones. And it's getting to the point where we can actually have a discussion and make a statement on, you know, how diverse and inclusive is our product. And we might find out that it's not, and that will potentially lead to further discussions. We might uncover that it is, but there's still opportunities to move things forward. So it's kind of that summary question, really.
Yeah, and it's really important to note what Ruby just said. You might find that your product is not diverse and not inclusive, but that's okay as long as you know why and you've made a conscious choice to say, this is what's best for our product. We're joking that if you had a TV show and it was set in a male prison, well, yeah, there's not going to be any women there. That's fine. Don't shoehorn it in. You know, do it right, do it justice, but you're not going to be able to fix anything if you don't know the problems.
All right, and so I'm having a hard time reading. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Oh, yes. This is very important. Basically, we wanted to share this today because it is relatively straightforward, but it's that ability to be aware and know where you stand, and then also the next ability is to really be able to prioritize the diversity and inclusion component of your game, because we all live in the real world with budgets and timelines and a finite amount of resources. So it really comes down, I think, to us when talking about diversity and inclusion. What we've found really successful is making it an easy conversation by having that data and creating the awareness. And there's a lot of work that goes in behind this in terms of, you know, quantitative analysis of the scenes, et cetera, et cetera. But the discussion and what we found is really engaging is around the big picture, these four questions, the awareness and the priority establishment.
And questions are very, very non-threatening. They're just a way to say, like, hey, can we talk about this? Where do you think we're at? And again, diversity and inclusion is one component of making choices for your game. It's not the only one. This is not a personal crusade. I only ever, when I'm on my game team and designing features for my game, I do things that I think are going to make the game better and sell more of that product. So it's not, again, not a personal crusade, it's not a mandate, and it's not a judgment.
All right, thank you for sharing. So I'd like to move over to The Sims, which is a different type of game, and then I want to ask the panel a question with regards to, like, we talked about external consultancy, and how do we actually, within the same organization, within EA, or within Microsoft, whatever studio or company you work for, how do we share information across? So I'd like the Sims team to kind of walk us through your characters and life simulation and all the diversity pieces that you've brought into play here. So if you want to give us a few examples of those.
So The Sims is, by nature, a sandbox game. We try to give our players all the abilities possible to tell the stories that they want to tell. On the animation team, what's interesting is we animate on one mesh character, and those animations end up being gender neutral because they play on both of our male and female Sims. We do have some animations within the game that are gender specific. We have a sexy female walk style, and we have a masculine walk style. But over the past, within the past year or so, we actually patched the game to provide our players with the ability to customize gender. So that what you're seeing here is we now allow our players to actually adjust cast pieces so that you can dress more masculine or feminine or make whatever stories that you feel you want to tell. And I think that's a really important initiative that we've added to our product. The other thing that we have done is, and I love this one about our game, because everybody's body shapes are different. We animate on a single size mesh, but we actually have the ability to, we have a full body retargeting IK system where when we animate, and I've got my hands on my hips, and we allow our players to customize their characters to any body shapes and sizes within a pretty wide range that are available to them, those animations will play with any body shape. And I think that's really important because as far as being inclusive, everybody's different. Everybody's shaped different. Everyone dresses different. And it allows us to utilize our animations on a wide variety of different shapes of people. Steph, I think that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Hello.
You can just click for me.
Click? Yeah. I'm not clicking.
To touch a little bit more
can
kind
you
of about
this slide. Clark.
There you go. Oh, oh. Sorry, guys.
To touch a little bit more just about how we try to pull in like different cultures, and really The Sims, I feel like, is to be flexible, right? To let people tell their own stories. I think we hit a wide audience because it's not very linear. You can tell stories, you can play however you want. So in order to kind of like give them more stories to tell, we kind of focus on different things that like our team and stuff wants to focus on. So you can see here is like, I think this is the Diwali patch that we released. We also did City Living. So City Living with Sam Ashuna was kind of based off San Francisco, and the different festivals that went on were based off like Japanese Blossom Festival and kind of different touches. I think Menorah, I think that was like a Hanukkah update. And then the last one is, I think, the new game pack that came out with San Salvador. So really kind of just touching, giving people more opportunities to tell stories. Something we do too, in terms of development process, the way Sims work is generally the DDs give me a schedule and I tell them if it's good or not. And then we kind of work with design. Generally the themes, there's a lot of stuff that goes in with the themes. We do a lot of customer research about what people want. Kind of start there, and then we have meetings to go over design and see how we want to create the game, how we create the game, and I kind of work with Lacey and a lot of engineers and different groups just to be able to figure out how we make the game. And once we've figured that out, the thing that I like about what we do is we have this process called change review after kind of like the first wave of things that we think will make a good game. We kind of open up to the entire team to be like, hey guys, what do you guys think that will make the game better? And I feel like that's when we are more inclusive, where we're getting ideas from kind of all parts of development. So animators can submit, engineers can submit. So I feel like that definitely adds value to what we end up shipping.
Yeah, it's total inclusivity to all the ideas across anybody. It doesn't matter what level or position you have, you can submit these ideas. And a lot of great things have come out of CR requests or emails.
Yeah, I think that's something that I really value on our team. Like we have this culture where you can give back, because everybody's a Sims player, right? It's playing with life. So you all have your opinions. And also being such a diverse game team, we all have ideas about how to celebrate Diwali or Hanukkah or Christmas or whatever it is that you're celebrating. And the part that I really like also is that we do user testing too with real Sims players, right? I mean, even though we're all real Sims players, we actually have like a set of questions that we want to answer, like, how is this working? And then that change review period that Steph mentioned is something that we can use to address the feedback from consumers. So I really like that part of it.
Thank you very much. Well, I know you're all very seasoned game developers, so I'd like to just, if you could give yourself a piece of advice, and then we'll open it up to the audience, because I think we have about 10 minutes, and I'd love to get questions from the audience. But if you could look back at yourself maybe 10 years ago in your career, what piece of advice would you give yourself today, knowing what you know today? And why don't we start with Ruby at the end?
I'd be like, go get into games, because I wasn't in games. But I think it really comes down to just the breadth of the work that we have. You know, in organizations like ours, not only just by discipline, the variety of things we have, but the number of games and how different all of those games are. So I think you can really find your place. I think if I had to tell myself one thing, it would be like, get into this industry. It's fascinating. It's growing. And it's really rewarding because you get to tangibly make things that so many people enjoy and love. And so you get this amazing opportunity, this platform that I never thought I would be part of something that
just, I don't even know the numbers for FIFA, but you know, just how many people experience it. So I would say jump in and wholeheartedly, because it's an amazing industry.
I think what I would say is sort of what we've been saying this whole time is that everyone here has something to contribute to games. And you have amazing ideas and you have amazing things that you can do, but none of that matters unless you can communicate them effectively and unless you can influence the right way. And I've been in my career for a really long time, and I'm only really just now starting to realize how I can influence the right way. Because when I was new in my career, I would just come in like guns blazing, and everyone just gets defensive and they don't want to do anything, like if you act that way. If I could go back in time, I would just tell Katie to like chill out and like try to find ways to let people know what you're thinking and bringing to the table in a way that is psychologically safe. And that's something we work a lot on FIFA, is this psychological safety, making sure that even this four-question framework that we've been working with, and as I had described before, using questions is so, it's so not dangerous. It's so easy to talk about. It's not threatening, and it doesn't mandate anything. And I think if I could go back in time, I would just say, like, find ways to influence where people don't really even realize that you're influencing, and that they feel kind of cool about it and chill.
And to kind of add to that, I would go back to my younger self and actually force myself to reach out and find a mentor earlier on in my career. I ended up finding a mentor. Well, first I had been assigned a mentor, and that didn't go well. It's just like forcing two people together with different, that didn't go very well for me. But later on in my career, you know, as I had gone up to people and started asking questions because they had done something a certain way, and all of a sudden there's a conversation, and now you're having lunch together, and now all of a sudden this person is your mentor who you're talking to on a daily basis. I think that is so incredibly important for your career growth as you're really early on in your career. I also think finding a sponsor. They could be one and the same person, but if they're not, a sponsor is somebody who's going to actually be championing your career for you to advance in your growth through the years. You're going to be in this industry a very long time, and having somebody that you trust who is going to champion your work and your skill set from behind closed doors, I think is really important.
So I think if I was going to talk to my younger self, when I first started, I was kind of sitting back and letting my manager kind of think, oh, my manager will take care of my future in some way, right? Like, oh, they'll tell me about the opportunities that come up that I would be great for. But that's actually not the case. You actually have to proactively look for it and figure out, even if you're not sure what you want to do, I think that's a great opportunity. Like I said before, like I did gameplay engineering, I did tools engineering, and eventually I realized that UI was where I really thrived and I really loved it. And not that I didn't like those previous things, but just that was on me, right? No one was going to tell me that was what, or give me the opportunity. And they may ask me, like, oh, there's a spot, are you interested? But really, if you want something, you have to go out and get it. And then tell your manager or tell whoever will listen. Because then if the opportunity comes up, they'll think of you first. Yeah. And that's the one thing I didn't do early on that I wish I had.
Great advice.
For me, if you're still in school, my number one, the best advice that I was ever given is to do internship. There's so much out there for students. I feel strongly about it. It definitely helped me pave the way to what I wanted to do. In terms of like starting out, I was very curious when I started, but I felt like I could have been more curious. Like, just ask people to have lunch, try to figure out and kind of grow in that way. And I also agree with Seema in terms of career planning. No one's gonna plan that but you. You may get lucky and get an awesome manager, but like you should be also thinking about it for yourself.
Awesome, thank you ladies. I think that was really great advice. And unfortunately, I do think we're running out of time. So what I will say though is all of these wonderful women will be around, and we have open floor areas outside. So if you wanted to come up to some of us and ask some questions or make some connections, share some maybe cards for some networking later, that's the whole point of this event and rally. So we'd love to have you come up and chat with us. And I just wanted to thank you all for bringing your intellectual IP and sharing all your wonderful stories and perspectives on how we can make our games better and more inclusive of everyone's perspective. Thank you all for coming.
Thanks, ladies.